Better. She smiles up at me. I touch her chin and say, deal. Then I grab the bottle, lime slices and shot glasses and head across the kitchen to where my mates are gathering with Anna and Cope. When I'm standing right next to her, I'm struck again by a sensation of betrayal. She's acting sweet and innocent here with Cope, but I've seen her high and desperate for more drugs. I've heard her begging me to keep going. I know her. I know her when she's sweet and I know her when she's salty. I notice the way her eyes dart to the bottle with longing because, unlike the others, I'm watching for it. Tequila, anyone? I say to her. She squirms uncomfortably as others call for drinks and I hand them out. Cope? I say, because I haven't forgotten how he ignored my warning to back off. Anna? I want to call them both out for pretending to be perfect when they're just as fucked up as the rest of us. They just stare at me, clearly unhappy. Good. Oh, that's right, I say. I nearly forgot. The prince and princess would never stoop so low. Well, bottoms up to us peasants. I've made everyone uncomfortable and I don't care. I want to laugh. It's all a big joke, isn't it? This thing called life, where we hurt, where we work so hard not to care, and then a bit of feeling creeps in and people use it to hurt us further. We take our shot and it burns through my chest. I can see Anna gripping the counter, trying not to look at me as she craves the liquor in my hand. How's your soda, princess? I ask her. You don't need to be hateful, she whispers. Her words are like a sharp pin to my inflated chest, and I feel like shite for half a second. If you ask me, I'd say the princess prefers a dark night, Ginger says. If I'm the dark night, Gin is wrong. She only thinks she does, I respond, but I'm not so sure she prefers me over Prince Cope at all. I can't even look at Anna's reaction. We end up out back and I tip up the bottle, chugging the pungent alcohol when nobody's paying me any mind. I leave the empty bottle on the deck and head for the yard under the trees with the others. I sit heavily in a flimsy lawn chair and lean back, switching my gaze between Cope and Anna, who won't look at me. If the two of them want me out of the picture, I'm not going to make it easy on them. It's not how I work. I am not a gracious loser. Marna suggests a game of truth or dare, so I decide to cut to the chase. I'll go first. I dare Cope to kiss Anna. It's like a monk kissing a nun. Brilliant. I lean back and cross my arms, enjoying their shifty-eyed embarrassment. Anna suddenly stands, I'm assuming to get far away from me, but instead she heads straight for me and kicks my chair up. I lose my balance and topple backward like an idiot. When I look up and see her standing over me with eyes ablaze, I can only grin. There's my girl. I'm relieved I've made her feel something. Ginger and Blake are cracking up as Anna storms away. Jay goes after her, and then Marna trails him. I try to push my hearing out, only to realise I'm too drunk to do so. Capano is glaring at me hard. I get to my feet. Is there a problem? I ask him, holding my arms out. I sound like my bloody father. Cope only sighs as if disappointed. Before he can respond, Marna is yelling my name. Excitement clutches me as I forget about Cope and head for the side of the house. Marna and Jay pass me, but I ignore them because all I can see is Anna standing there with her arms crossed and her head down. I move to stand in front of her, and my anger is smothered by a blanket of her softness. I'm at a loss. I know I've been a prick. Sorry, I whisper, shocking myself. I'm sorry, too, about the whole chair-flipping thing. No, I deserved it. She looks at me, and the world clears a bit. Just standing here, the two of us, makes me feel secure. I know it's stupid and fleeting, but I can see in her eyes that she still feels for me. And that is all I needed. I can't let myself sober up while the twins are around. I can't allow anyone to know how I feel. So I pull the flask from my pocket and take a long drag. Ugh! Bourbon and tequila are not a good combination. I'm not quite as drunk as I was 10 minutes ago, but I have to keep a good buzz going. I walk with Anna back to the group. When we sit, I get a strange sensation up the back of my neck and I turn to look for whisperers. The others are laughing and playing truth or dare for real, but I can't shake the feeling something's off. My hearing is still wonky from the alcohol, but I hear a girl near the back door say my name, and when I look up I see the platinum hair through the window. She's looking for me, and I don't want to deal with it right now, So I get up and move to hide behind the tree while Blake tells her I'm not out here. That's a good boy. I expect the strange feeling to pass, but it doesn't, so I keep alert. Everyone cheats, I hear Ginger say. That's not true, I mumble without thinking. They all stare at me, and I could kick myself for saying something so pure out loud. I can only shrug. Well, it's not. Ginger likes to think everyone cheats because she can get 99% of them to do it. But in fairness, she only goes for the ones who seem dodgy anyhow, just as I go for the ones who are showing signs of lust for me. What the hell do you know about it? She snaps. I hate my life as much as the next Neff, but Gin is poisonous about it. Nothing, I suppose. I'm feeling prickly, like I need to do a perimeter check for whisperers. I don't want the others to worry, but that sensation of being watched will not go away. I know I need another drink. I send my hearing around me in a circle like a radar as I walk to the house. But when I get inside, the feeling dissipates. It's something outside. I go back out and freeze at the edge of the deck. No. Blood slams through me as a giant dark spirit circles Anna. I can't make out his features, but he looks vaguely familiar. Everyone is still until the whisperer flies off. Mana quietly sends Jay away. As he comes up to the deck, I make my way down the steps at a jog. This is not good. I would swear it was Azahel, Mana says. But what was he doing? My ears ring as everyone talks. Azahel, Satan's messenger spirit. My world flips and I feel as if I'm dangling in midair. Please, not this. Not her. What are you not telling us? Ginger demands. My eyes lock with Anna's. I need to get her out of here. I stretch my hearing in a farther radius and catch booted footsteps beside the house. My heart rate goes berserk as I realize it's too late to run. I slowly turn my head to the sound of the footsteps as a big-ass man steps out and walks toward us with casual, even steps. He's bald and broad with a goatee, and he's got a thick amber badge at his sternum. Belial. I'm immediately relieved that it's him and not one of the other dukes, but I still don't trust him, no matter what Anna says. This brute can definitely snap a neck with no remorse if it suits him. And when he sees me and glimpses my badge, that's exactly what it looks like he wants to do. You're a hard one to find, he says to Anna. Damn, his voice is even deeper and more intimidating in person. I want to know why he's come and what he plans to do with her. I feel the weight of my knife in my pocket, and I will not hesitate to use it, no matter how big he is. Then Anna introduces all of us. When she gets to me, her father cuts her off. Son of Farzef! He sneers, and it's clear there's no love between him and my father. My stomach turns, and I'm filled with self-loathing from the look in Belial's eye. I'm not good enough for his daughter. I nod and drop my eyes. You're leaving with me, girl, he says to Anna. Time to start your training. It takes all my power not to look up and shout my first reaction of no. I don't want her submersed in this life. But it's too late. Anna goes compliantly to his side as if he's asked to take her to the park. She gives me a small smile and I know she's telling me she'll be okay, but I'm too nervous. I can't let anything happen to her. I stretch my hearing to follow them, but they don't speak. And then they're out of range. Gone. And I cannot keep her safe. Chapter 12. Triangle Thing. I'd never dreamed that I'd meet somebody like you. I'd never dreamed that I'd lose somebody like you. Wicked Game by Chris Isaac. A few minutes of stunned silence pass after they leave, and then I reach in my pocket for my keys. Ginger grabs my arm, digging her fingers in when I try to pull away. Where do you think you're going? She hisses. I'm off to work a different party. Bollocks! She eyes me suspiciously, and I level her with a stare. She always could read me too well. Blake removes her claw from my arm and says, It's all good, brah, we'll catch you later. Mana pushes past them and squeezes me around the waist. It takes me a moment to relax and hug her back, and then I'm off. I don't even look Cope's way. I just need to be sure Anna makes it home all right, I tell myself. I get on the highway and push my hearing as far up the road as I can, threading through each car, but none of them are Anna and Belial. I don't calm down until I'm within a mile of Anna's apartment complex. I throw the vehicle into park in the lot of an abandoned petrol station and listen. I can hear her moving around her room, the shuffle of clothing and linens. Is she going to bed? She starts humming a song by Pink, and I nearly laugh at how she's at ease while I'm on edge. It's 1 in the morning. Anna is safe. I've no clue where Belial's gone. Did he truly show up at the party just to nab her and take her home? I'm not buying it. It's too bizarre. I'll just stay for a bit to listen. It's hard not to doze when Anna falls asleep, because the sound of her breathing is so comforting and even. At some point, my chin falls to my chest, and I startle myself awake as an early autumn wind whistles through the darkness. It's just after 3. I should go. I shuffle my extended hearing back up the road and into the apartment one last time. Then I nearly jump out of my skin. Anna and Patty are both shrieking. I fumble with the keys and finally crank the engine, peeling out of the pebbled lot. Shite, how could I bloody well fall asleep? I knew something was up. It's chaos at the apartment, with Patty yelling and Anna crying. I accelerate. I cannot figure out what the hell's going on. A knock at their door ratchets my pulse higher, and rain splatters the windshield, muddling my hearing. This is my friend Cope, I hear Anna say, and I go cold all over. What the hell? That scheming pretty boy must have been right outside her neighbourhood. Whispers were here, Anna says to him. I could see them. Whispers, wait, she could see them? My poor girl, her voice is trembling. I turn too quickly into the apartment complex, going up on the damn curb and probably killing a flower bed. Don't care. I am seeing red, the raging bull kind. Why are the whispers haunting her? Who sent them? And why is Cope here? I park across 2 spots and leap out, taking the steps 3 at a time, and burst into Anna's apartment. She screams and claps her hands over her mouth. I jump and reach for my blade when a raspy voice behind me says, "What in God's name is going on over there?" Bugger, just an old neighbour. Anna pulls me in and shuts the door. "What are you doing here?" she yells at me. She's wearing a threadbare fitted t-shirt and fuzzy blue shorts and has adorable bedhead, ponytail askew. I want to shove Cope from the room so he can't see her like this. From the corner of my eye I spy movement, but it's only Patty. My heart warms a bit when she seems relieved to see me. "They could come back any second and see us together and tell your father." Anna is still yelling at me. "Go home!" No, I want to know what happened. I want her to tell me about the demons and what they did to her, the way she told Cope. I look over at him with his arms crossed and something inside me cracks. He doesn't look smug, only resolute, as if he's not budging from his place as protector. And why should he? Anna's not telling him to leave. "Yes, I'll go," I say with a measure of bitterness. "You've got help." I slip past her half-hearted attempt to stop me, and she doesn't come after me. I'm too angry to listen anymore. I don't want to hear them talking, even though I'm dying to know every detail about the whisperers. The footsteps coming down the dim stairs behind me are too heavy to be Anna's. I flex my fist as I turn to face Capano at the bottom of the stairs. Rain is falling in torrents around us, and we're barely protected by the edge of the stairwell's awning. "Let us go somewhere and talk," Capano says. "We can talk here. She never uses her senses." Feels good to throw that fact at him. There's loads about Anna he doesn't know. "Do not be upset, Kai," he says calmly. "I feel only concern for her." Right, if by concern he means attraction and awe. "I'll bet you do. Even you are willing to risk yourself for her, brother." Okay, so he can tell I feel attraction and awe as well. So what? "That's because I actually know her. What's your reason? I suppose you'd like to get to know her too." "You've made it very clear that she is not available in that way." And yet he has pursued. "Be reasonable. There is plainly more at stake here. I only wish to help." Bull fucking crikey. How is he going to help? By being her shoulder to cry on? He's just as powerless against the Dukes and Whisperers as I am. He can lie to himself, but not to me. He wants her. There's nothing you can do, Cope. He tries to calm me, which makes me more furious. "There is no stronger weapon for Farzaf to use than your concern for each other.
If he learns you are here to console her, you will lose all leverage with him. Do not fool yourself into thinking he will not discard you.
Yes, I say with pure malice. Some of us have to worry about such things. Thank you for the reminder.
I've been taken off guard by this conversation, and I catch the sound of heavy footsteps too late.
Cope's eyes widen as he peers over my shoulder, and I spin, whipping out my switchblade with a zing and holding it in front of me, where Duke Belial stands mere feet away, looking lethal as a bomb.
He smiles down at my knife, water dripping from his face.
Put it away, boy. Sorry to break up the testosterone party.
With a shaking hand, I slide the blade back in and slip it into my pocket. Anna comes racing down the stairs barefooted and stops herself just short of us. She looks up at Belial and yells, "Dad!" Her hands cover her mouth as she looks between us. When Belial faces her full on, her hands fall to her side and her face goes slack.
"It was you?" she whispers. "You sent them?"
My head snaps to Belial to see his jaw set. Everything suddenly makes itself clear and I nearly sag where I stand. He sent the whisperers to haunt her. Anna is not under suspicion and her father does not want to hurt her. He's trying to smarten her up. He's forced her to acknowledge and see the demons. It's admirable and heinous all at once. Belial turns on me and Capano, stepping closer. We both stand taller under his intense scrutiny. This is obviously a man who wants to protect his daughter, and right now he's staring us down like we're threats. Shame burns me as I realise what fools we were standing out here arguing when larger issues are at stake.
"This little thing,"
Belial says, pointing between Cope, Anna and me,
"isn't going to fly. Don't worry yourselves about Anna anymore, you hear?"
I nod, but there's no way in hell I can stop worrying about Anna. I'm in too deep.
"Then get on out of here,"
he says in that low voice,
"and keep your heads in the game."
Anna is watching the ground where the rain falls next to us. I don't look at anyone as I turn to leave, climbing into my vehicle, driving straight into the storm, head on. Love Letter by Kaiden Rowe. Staring at this paper, trying to write a love letter. This is not my thing. Yeah, it's just not me. My mind turns instead to a wicked beat in my head, and I bang out the lyrics to a song. Yeah, I bang out the lyrics to a song. "You're soft to my hard, you're sweet to my salt. If we both end up naked, it'll all be my fault. Yeah, I'll take the blame, that's it, say my name. You're gorgeous, you're stunning, let me win at this game." Chorus. "Gimme, gimme, gimme, I'm greed when you're near. I want more, I need more, ignore all of my fear. Heat me, scald me, burn me, I'm lust for your touch. You kill with a smile, and I refuse to be rushed." How's this for a love note? Do my words rock your boat? If not, I'll try harder, take things a bit farther. You bet your arse I'll do that, raise the bar, sexy cat. So step closer to me, turn up the AC, you'll be singing the chorus in 1, 2, 3. Chorus. "Roses are red and violets are blue. That played out shit isn't for you. I got your love letter right here in my eyes. If you look deep enough, you'll see through the lies." Chapter 13. Good Witch, Bad Ape. "Baby, you're beautiful and there's nothing wrong with you. It's me. I'm a freak. What do you want from me?" by Adam Lambert. I've always lived life like a game, moving my piece along the board, taking pleasure where I can, but feeling otherwise numb. Until a surprise came along and fucked it right up. Life is still a game now, only the rules have changed. Each move I make lands me on a mystery space, and I'm forever unsteady. Over and over I imagine her as she was that night, sitting on the bed in the hotel room, like a still shot captured in my brain. Her fluorescent pink aura, shockingly beautiful, surrounding her skin as she held a pillow to her nearly naked chest. That image, it does me in every time. It slices me to pieces. She's safe now, in her father's care, or as safe as a Nephilim can be.
I resist the urge to drive over and check on her each time Father leaves for New York. I remind myself the Whisperers could see us, and I've already tempted fate enough by spending far too much time with her in the past. It's made me careless. I only work the days Father is in Atlanta. I know it's bloody dangerous to limit myself to only a few half-hearted hookups a week, but Anna has ruined me with a craving for something far more substantial. She possesses the only thing that can fill the deep void within me, and nothing else comes close. It's been over 2 months since I've seen her. When I caught sight of Jay at a party last week, I was caught in a moment of desperation. "Heard about the Halloween field party, mate?" I'd asked. Good old Jay lit up at the invitation just as I counted on. I'm not certain he'll bring Anna, but it's worth a try. She probably won't come, smart girl that she is. Halloween is one of the demons' favourite nights of the year to whisper their sweet nothings. I didn't let Father see the Halloween costume I'd rented. It's the ultimate way to hide from people. Only one girl will be able to recognise me in this giant gorilla costume. She'll see an ape with a red badge. Halloween has always been my favourite holiday. People dressing in ways they normally wouldn't dare. Inhibitions down, even without drugs and alcohol. And dark exhilaration in the air. Tonight is no different as I scan the field of laughing people, but I don't feel the buzz I normally do on this night. The gorilla head smells rank, and it's hot inside this damn thing. Between my nerves and the lack of ventilation, I'm sweating. I look through the mesh eyes at the crowd. There must be several hundred people there to see the five bands play. Not our band tonight, though I'm certain Raj, Michael and Bennett are around here somewhere. I focus my eyes, pulling each face into clear view from across the field. I wonder what Anna will be wearing. I imagine her in a sexy angel outfit. The irony would be our secret. My gaze halts on the fuzzy blonde head of Jay with an eye patch and a fake parrot propped on his shoulder. Next to him is a small green witch wearing a ratty black wig and pointy hat with a badge at her sternum only I can see. I grin to myself inside the mask as cool relief floods my system. She's here. I won't approach her. I don't know how she feels anymore. A lot can change in 2 months, especially when I've done my best to push her away. She deserves better. I feel the burn rise when I think of Capano. Makes me want to rip off the gorilla head so I can breathe easier, but I'm not in the mood to be recognised by anyone other than Anna. Cope is quite possibly the only man on earth worthy of Anna, but I'll be damned if I'll let him have her when her love's the only thing I've ever wanted. Impossible thoughts plague me. Impossible desires. Dangerous dreams. I watch Anna now as she glances down at herself, then crosses her arms, looking self-conscious of her chest in the tight black dress. I have a spanking good view of Anna's side profile. My gaze outlines the curve of her back down to her waist, landing on her round arse. A deep, intoxicating stir is triggered within me. Good thing this ruddy costume is roomy. My thoughts sober, my pulse spikes when I realise she's looking at me now, recognising me. I don't move. We stare for what feels like forever before she finally waves. I'm overcome with joy at this simple acknowledgement. I lift a paw and chuckle at Anna's greenness. A girl I hadn't noticed before grabs Anna's hand and says something. I focus my hearing on them. "Who are you waving at?" the girl asks. She's dressed like a provocative Minnie Mouse. "That big monkey," Anna says. "I think he's staring at us." "Correction, dear. I'm only staring at you." They both watch me expectantly, so I lift an arm and scratch the furry armpit, which makes them laugh. I think I recognise the girl as the one Anna was dancing with at that lake party ages ago. I still love thinking about how I stole her away from that wanker in the bedroom that night, and the look on his face. It's one of my few prized memories. Anna turns away from me and starts chewing on her nail. She's not coming over, the stubborn thing, but I'm too greedy not to see her face to face while I can. I won't talk to her for long, just a moment, just to get my fix, and then I can leave. I walk to them and pull off the costume head, shaking out my sweat-dampened hair and sucking in the fresh night air. Both of the girls' eyes widen. Minnie's white polka dots temporarily cover over with a red aura. Anna frowns when she notices. The girl has a slight bump in the arch of her nose that gives her face a certain seductiveness, though she probably hates it. Girls are like that when it comes to their bodies. I look at Jay and say, "Arr, matey!" He laughs and sticks out his hand for me to shake, which I do. Nice bloke. "What's up, man?" he says. I throw a drummer joke at him, since he always likes to lay them on me. "What's the difference between a drummer and a savings bond?" I ask. His grin is huge and his aura bright yellow. "I don't know, what?" "A savings bond matures and eventually makes money." He laughs and reaches out for another appreciative hand slap. When we turn to the girls, Minnie's colours have settled back down. "This is my friend Veronica," Anna says in a level voice. "And this is Cotton." "Oh, I've heard all about you," Veronica tells me with a big, knowing smile. I raise my eyebrows with interest. Girl talk, brilliant. I find nothing more amusing than eavesdropping on girls in conversation. They give blokes a hard time for things we say behind closed doors, but girls are just as bad. I focus my attention on Anna now and decide I don't like the green face paint. It covers over her freckle. And what is that blob on the end of her nose? A wart? Only Anna would try to make herself less attractive. "Nice wart," I say, then flick the dangling thing off. She gasps and both her friends laugh. "I told you it was stupid," Veronica gloats. But Anna's a good sport. She rubs a finger over her nose to even the paint, going adorably cross-eyed in the process. I fight back a smile. Anna and I lock eyes. I used to be uncomfortable under her gaze, the way it made me feel vulnerable. Now I welcome that feeling, even for a moment. She crosses her arms and says, "Your hair has grown a lot." "So is your bottom," I respond without thinking. Oh, shite. I know better than to make growth comments to girls, or anything indicative of size that could be deemed unflattering, but it just sort of slipped out. Her friends burst into laughter, and there isn't enough paint in the world to hide the shock on Anna's face. "Dude, you can get away with anything," Jay tells me. "I meant it as a compliment," I say honestly. Veronica is still laughing when she grabs Jay by the hand and leads him away. He shoots me a serious look of warning as they go. I respect him even more for his protective feelings over Anna, especially now that I know he's never fancied her, which is insane to me. I flick my head to the side to get the hair out of my eyes while Anna shifts, biting her lip and staring at the grass. "Say something, you git." I haven't a clue what to say, though. Should I apologize for the bum comment? "My dad gave me a cell phone," Anna says in that sweet voice of hers, looking up again. The green paint and night sky make her brown eyes even darker. I pull my own mobile from the ape pocket and blow a piece of lint from it. When I raise my eyebrows, she starts giving me her number, but the damn costume is not cooperating. Without asking, Anna takes the phone from me and programs her number. That small act of familiarity, as if she has every right to touch my things, makes me even hotter for her. I want to throw her over my shoulder and carry her into the woods to claim her. Right. She's staring at me in that way that makes it seem as if she can read my mind. I clear my throat. "How do things go with your father and the training?" I ask. "It went fine, I guess," she answers quietly, crossing her arms again. "I know my drinking limits now and all that." I try to imagine Anna drinking. Is she a silly or a sad drunk? I kind of hope I'll never find out. Anna moves closer, my breath stops. "I understand what you mean now about the dangers of being together. I didn't get it then, Kai, but I do now." I can't breathe. She gives me her trademark look, the one that drains me of all strength and makes me want to give her anything she wants. I'm too weak. I turn toward the stage where the music begins and try to regain my momentum, but she keeps talking, moving closer. "I know it's risky to see each other, but we could talk on the phone when your father's not around, if you want." If I want. She has no clue how much I want. But I can't simply have a tiny slice of Anna. I'm no masochist. It has to be all or nothing, and all would ensure the death of us both. That's not a good idea. I say. Even now, since we've been standing here together, I've not once looked around for whisperers. She turns me into a single-minded idiot every time. I turn from the stage toward a group of loud people behind us, but I can't concentrate on a damn thing. I think about our trip all the time, she whispers, her words sinking into my bones. Do you ever think about it? Every day. Sometimes. With a feminine grunt of frustration, Anna grabs hold of the front of my costume with her little fists, shocking me. I look anywhere but at her. Why did you invite Jay to this party? She demands. To see if you still love me. But I won't let her pry my feelings from me. It'll only make things harder. Ironically, isn't that what I'm trying to do as well? Find out if she loves me so it can be difficult all over again. I don't know, I grind out. Who am I kidding? I'm a complete masochist seeking out pain, and a sadist as well, the way I keep hurting her. She pulls harder on my costume, and the amount of passion in her tiny form fills my body with a buzzing need. Her voice quavers. I can't keep living like this, Kai. I need to know how you feel. I need to know one way or another so I can have some sort of closure. It's clear she still cares, but she doesn't want to. I have to stop doing this to us. I have to stop thinking about her and make her stop thinking about me, no matter how it hurts. I thought you'd be over it by now, I say harshly, making the mistake of looking down into her eyes, lively even in the darkness. It doesn't work like that, she says. I stare down at her in desperation. I need to burn this bridge, to deceive her into believing I don't give a shit. But haven't I tried that already? Hasn't she seen through me like no one else ever has? Damn her see the best in people ways. Smoke from a nearby bonfire blows over us. Don't invite Jay to any more parties, Kaiden. If there's even the slightest chance you'll be there, I'm not going. It hurts too much to see you. Even when she's being tough, she's too sweet, grabbing me by the heartstrings and twisting. So why did you come? I ask. Her green face bears an expression of sad turmoil. Reaching up, she pulls off the tangled black wig, and I feel like the wind had been knocked from my lungs. Her long, natural, honey-coloured hair is gone, replaced by bright blonde streaks and a sexy chopped style. A wave of sadness and loss rocks through me. She's had to change. With or without me in her life, she is a Neff, and there is no escaping it. I gather my strength and say, you should go then. Don't go. Don't bloody leave me. Throw your arms around me. I don't care if you smear my face with paint, Anna. Tell me you love me. Show me you still want me. Torture me a bit more. Oh, God. She's walking away from me, just as she'd done at LAX. I should let her go. But I'm shaken. Wait, I shout. She doesn't stop. My pulse rockets into overtime. I push past people and run forward, wrapping my hand around her tiny waist and spinning her to face me. Fuck! How can she turn away like that? I yank her closer, fully aware I'm acting like an absolute psycho, but I'm too weak to do what needs to be done. She is mine. Doesn't she know that? Because my body and soul are screaming it, demanding me to make her mine in every way. Her eyes stare up at me with a mix of fear and hope, reminding me what an asswipe I am to keep doing this to her. Once again, I've royally screwed everything up. I need to let her go, but instead I find myself touching her face with a stupid paw, cursing the costume for getting in the way of feeling her soft skin, cursing her green paint for hiding her face from me. With a furry thumb, I wipe the paint from above her lip and she yanks back. What are you doing? There it is. The perfectly round brown dot, at once innocent and sexy. I wanted to see your freckle. The inside of my costume is a sauna at this point. I want more than anything to kiss her. One last taste. Don't do it, you evil bastard. Don't make it harder on her. Just push her away. What do you want from me, Kai? She whispers. Isn't it obvious? I want everything.
Why can't I control these feelings, and why should I have to? It all fills me with a raging fury of injustice. I grip her tighter. For starters, I growl, I want to introduce myself to every freckle on your body. I feel her tremble in my hand, sending my body to its boiling point in the ape suit. So, just something physical then? That's all you want? I hate myself for my inability to let her go. If I can't push her away, maybe I can force her to push me. Tell me you hate me. It would be so much easier if she did. But I don't hate you. I couldn't. Her breath smells like bubblegum. Everything about her is too sweet for me. You could, I assure her, pulling her tighter, and you should. She's fighting tears when she says, I'm letting you go, but only because I have to. I need to move on with my life, but I'll never hate you. Yes, let me go. Move on. Then maybe I can do the same. I force myself to open my hands and let her go. She stumbles back, shooting me one last heartbreaking, wide-eyed stare. And then, just like at the airport, she turns from me and walks abruptly away, her matted blonde hair falling against her shoulders. And just like before, she doesn't turn back. I roughly yank the gorilla head over my face. It smells as sour as I feel. Damn the maker and the deceiver. Damn them all. Chapter 14. Anna's Test. I really miss your hair in my face and the way your innocence tastes. Better Than Me by Hinder. We've been good. We've stayed away from each other since Halloween, 2 months exactly. But still, we are not safe. Always threats lurk. And this one snuck up. All the fear I've known since meeting Anna 7 months ago has led to this night. She's under suspicion. I could have helped her avoid this fate. I could have put aside my own selfishness and properly trained her during our road trip, but I didn't. Instead, I've played games, pushing her away and reeling her back in for the past 7 months. And now she's forced to go against her personal morals to save her life. Honestly, I don't know if she can pull it off. The other Neff and I have given her as much information and advice as we possibly can. We'll be at her side tonight, each of us working, but she has to do her part on her own. I'm more nervous for her than I've ever been for myself. You all right there, babe? Marna asks, leaning up from the back seat. My knuckles are white, and I force myself to loosen my grip on the wheel. Yeah, I say, fine. Blake claps my shoulder from the passenger seat. We got this, brah. Just don't do anything stupid, Ginger mutters at me from the back, where she's applying another coat of eyeshadow, like that bloody awful haircut. I ignore her, running my hand over the buzz cut I gave myself while wasted on eggnog. I like it, Marna says. It's cute, he looks a bit like a criminal. Blake turns in his seat. Criminals are cute? Dude, whatev. Girls are weird. At this, Marna giggles. I catch Capano's eye in the rearview mirror. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time, hanging with a lot of us here in Atlanta for holiday break, when Father and the other US Dukes met at my house and called us all together, suggesting we work together as a group this New Year's Eve for maximum damage to the humans. We didn't know at the time Anna was under suspicion. Thankfully, Beely all tips her off. She'll most likely be tailed by whisperers all night who will report back to the Dukes about whether or not she's a suitable worker. Her life depends upon being a bad girl tonight. Cope will be working for the first time since he was 15, and I know he's doing it for our sakes. For Anna's sake. I'm grateful. We park at the hotel and I chug from my flask before I get out. I straighten my tie as we walk and feel the heavy slap of my wallet's chain against my thigh. I try to concentrate on these small details so as not to freak the hell out. Thankfully, no whisperers are in sight. Yet. It takes me half a second to find Anna when we walk into the darkened ballroom. She's dancing with that Veronica chick in true Anna fashion, as if this were an ordinary party and not a test in which her life is the prize. My worries are momentarily sidetracked as I watch the way her body moves with fluid grace, the way her ass shakes in perfect time to the beat. I reach down to adjust myself through my trousers, and Ginger huffs next to me, mumbling, "Oh, God." Or whatever. Anna is smiling and fanning herself when the song ends, and then she sees me and stops. I want to go to her and remind her of everything we told her about dealing with the Whisperers. I want to shield her and protect her and take this burden from her, but she's got to do this on her own. I cannot be a distraction, so I will make myself scarce. However, I'll be listening and watching when I can. It doesn't take long for the Whisperers to show, two of them, and they stalk her like the creepers they are. I want to tell them to back off and give her room to breathe. She's completely rigid when they first take to her, but to my surprise, she heads straight for the bar and shakes off the stiffness with determination. Knowing she's okay for now, I find a brunette in an emerald dress to talk to in a corner where I can see Anna from across the room. I manage to keep up a conversation, answering, nodding, even making the girl laugh, but she's only got a small portion of my attention. I'm more than a little proud of the way Anna handles herself at the bar, but I'm worried her friend Veronica is going to be an issue. I think she's together with Jay and... Oh, fantastic. Marna has him in her sights. What is she thinking? She should not be working on Anna's friend and causing unnecessary drama for her to deal with when she's trying to bloody concentrate. The moment Marna breaks away, I excuse myself and head over to her. I catch Marna near the poker tables. What are you doing? Not Jay, okay? Leave him be so Anna can focus. Her eyes are sad and she whispers, "Sorry." Oh, shite. I think her play for Jay was less about work and more about her possibly fancying him. Ginger marches up, frowning at me. She's got nothing to be sorry for. She's working the way you should be. Come on, Marn. She takes her sister by the elbow, and Marna casts an apologetic glance over her shoulder at me before they walk through the room, making eyes at all the guys who are coupled up. I shake my head and catch sight of Cope at the poker table. The blokes he's with are all edgy, their auras stirring with grey. We give each other a nod. I grab two wines from the bar and head back to the girl in the emerald dress. I don't care for wine, but she's a Chardonnay type, so I suck it up. Anna finally finishes with the Veronica J drama and is making her way to the bar again. She's only got one Whisperer flanking her now. I duck behind someone when Anna's eyes move in my direction. Loud chaos ensues, and suddenly people jump up, running to see. I stretch my hearing and nod to myself when I realise what's happening. "What's going on over there?" asks the girl I'm with. "Fight at the poker table," I say. She stands and shifts side to side, trying to catch a glimpse. The room's energy zings, and auras are fading as more alcohol is consumed, along with other drugs. The music gets louder. The brunette finishes her drink and eyes mine. I push it toward her with a grin and she smiles up at me, running her pearl necklace back and forth between her fingers. The last thing I want to do is talk to a girl right now. I can scarcely concentrate, but with Whisperers about, I can't afford to stand here and watch Anna all night. When I glance toward the bar again, I can't quite believe what I see. Anna is quite the little entertainer, working the bar crowd and throwing back shot after shot. I hope she still knows her limits.
"You seem distracted," says the brunette as she sips my Chardonnay.
"Sorry, love," I say. "I'm here with my cousin and she's quite the lush. Just trying to keep an eye on her."
"Oh, that's so sweet."
She gets off her stool and moves closer to where I sit, fitting my knee between her legs. My arm goes around her back automatically and I fight to keep my eye on her instead of turning to the bar again, especially as people whoop and cheer.
"I had to break up with my boyfriend last week because he cheated on me. Now I just want to have fun."
"That right?" I ask. Declarations like that used to make me rejoice. Her hand rubs my shoulder and she angles slightly sideways. She's way tipsy. Hollers blast from the bar area and the brunette peers over my shoulder.
"Uh-oh, is one of those your cousin?"
I turn. Anna, Marna, and two other sourced girls have climbed onto the bar and are dancing. The Whisperer is going crazy, dancing its own nasty jig all over the patrons.
The bartenders stand almost directly under them, staring up their dresses, pretending to be there to catch them, no doubt. The wankers. Yeah, I say absently. The brown-haired one on the end. Mana.
Oh, they're just having fun, says the girl. Don't worry about her, she's fine.
The girl begins to nuzzle my neck and two other immaculately coiffed girls approach.
Tasha, we're going up to do a line, wanna come?
They look me up and down approvingly.
He can come too.
Tasha, the brunette in emerald, looks at me.
Come with?
I can't. I nod toward Mana, thankful to have an excuse. She shakes her head at her friends.
I'm staying with Kaiden.
They give her knowing smiles and leave us. Damn, I was hoping she'd go too. She slinks over to face me.
You know, she says, we could go to my room. Your cousin's a big girl. She'll be okay.
I look over. Bloody hell, Anna is so sexy in that little dress, completely letting loose. I feel someone staring at me and catch Ginger at a table with a guy. She's frowning at me and throws a thumb over her shoulder, telling me to take the girl to her room. I narrow my eyes to tell her to shut up. The brunette runs a finger along my jaw, leaning forward as if to kiss me, and I have a moment of paranoia that Anna will see. The whisper is in sight and more could show at any moment, so I can't very well ignore Tasha's advances, but there's no way I'm going far from Anna. Come on. I take the girl by the hand and lead her from the ballroom, going the long way around to avoid the bar where the girls are being helped down. I'm just going to snog her to pass the time and make it seem as if I'm working toward more. No offence to Tasha, but I'm ditching her the first moment I know Anna's safe and we can go. My emerald-wearing brunette turns out to be drunker and randier than I thought. The moment we're out of the ballroom, she flings her arms heavily over my shoulders and goes up on her toes to smash her mouth against mine. People walking past us in the hall snigger and one guy yells, "Get a room!" I flick him off behind Tasha's back and the group laughs. I can't unhook her from around my neck, so we sort of swerve and stumble our way to the empty supply hall near the bathrooms. I shove my hearing back into the ballroom while experiencing the wettest kiss of my life. Before I can find Anna's voice in the mass, I feel a prickle on my neck, and the space around us darkens. A hair-raising cackle sounds in my mind, cutting off my extended hearing, and I nearly flinch. A whisperer is on us.
"Oh, God, yes,"
says Tasha, as the demon whispers in her ear, shoving away her guardian angel who fights against it. Time to work. I kiss her back now for real, taking control of the show and putting that sloppy mess to rest as I push her back against the wall. She moans and lets her head fall back into my hand. She grabs my lower back and pulls my hips flush against hers. After a minute, I think the whisperer leaves, but I can't stop to look. Tasha hikes her leg and I grab it, feeling the dress rise. Her hands are pulling out my shirt and finding their way to my bare back where her nails dig in. My hand slides higher until it's under her dress and she's going wild. My body works, but my mind is not in this hall. I go still at the sounds of familiar voices nearby. My head jerks around. No whisperers in sight, but I see the back of Ginger.
"What's wrong?" slurs Tasha. "I think I hear my cousin," I whisper, still not moving.
She groans with disappointment. Their voices are clear.
"Stop, that's not fair," says Anna.
"Fair?" snorts Jin. "You're no better than the rest of us."
"I never thought I was."
My heart goes still. Of course Ginger would be a complete cow to Anna. I drop the girl's leg. "I'm so sorry," I say, tucking in my shirt. "I've got to take care of something." "Oh no, I think Anna's running to the loo to be sick." Tasha tips to the side and I write her.
"Perhaps we should ring your mates, yeah?" "Wait, you're leaving?" "I have to go."
I don't feel too bad leaving her since she's staying in the hotel. I'm sure she'll find her way. But just in case, I pull a mobile from her small purse and put it directly in her hand.
"Call your friends."
She nods, then hollers at my back.
"Wait, what's your number? We can hang out later."
But I don't turn back. In the hall, I shove past Ginger and she shouts,
"Hey, you can't go in there."
I turn on her. "Stop trying to police the lot of us." She glowers.
What the hell's gotten into you, Kai?
If only she knew.
I turn away and march straight into the ladies' loo. Anna!
I see her feet in a stall at the end. My heart is pounding and filled with worry at how she's feeling after a night of whispers on her back.
Anne!
I'm fine, Kai,
she says, but she doesn't sound it. I need to see her, help her. I go to her stall and touch the handle.
You're sick. Let me in.
No, I'm fine now.
Shall I send Mana then?
No, I just want to be alone.
Go away in case the spirits come back.
I feel a burst of pride, followed by sadness, to hear the caution in her voice. She will forever be aware and more careful now. I didn't want her to have to learn this way, but it is what it is. I'm certain she's feeling shame and regret, but in my mind, she did nothing wrong. It's the life of a Neph. It's all muddled and grey for us. Whether we enjoy it or not is neither here nor there.
You did well tonight.
Go, she says. I think she might be on the verge of tears, and I want to demand that she let me in so I can hold her.
I want to be alone. Please just go away.
The pain in her voice guts me. I lean my head against her stall door as sounds of the countdown to midnight ring through the hotel. Happy New Year, I whisper, and I leave. Chapter 15. New Year's Day in the Big Apple. The fragile, the broken, sit in circles and stay unspoken. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Hospital for Souls by Bring Me the Horizon. At some point, I will learn to stop feeling relieved. When one thorny situation passes, something worse inevitably rises in its place. Hours after Anna's test has ended, an emergency summit is called in New York City. Anna has failed her test. There's no other explanation for the summit. Neph are not called to attend unless one of us is to be dealt with. I thought she did well, but apparently she let her true nature show at some point last night. Father sends his jet to get me, Blake, Cope, and the twins. I'm sick to my stomach. I can feel the others looking at me during the flight, but I can't stand to meet their eyes and see the pity there, or the mutual fear. I can only assume Anna's father will bring her to New York or attempt to escape with her. But if they run, the demon lot will give chase and they'll be found. Either way, Anna is doomed. I'm twisted up inside like a rope in intricate, nonsensical knots, so full of anger and hatred I can scarcely hold it in. I don't know how I'll make it through this night. I don't know how I'll be able to watch what torture the Dukes have in store for Anna. All day, I've tried to put on my straight face and close off my heart to any feelings. But this is too big. I can't numb myself. I can't block it out. I don't even know how she feels for me anymore. But it doesn't matter. I know how I feel, and watching her suffer will kill me. On the way to the hotel, I stop at a spirit shop and use my fake ID to buy bourbon. I have to keep a tolerant buzz tonight in order to hide any possible bond that might show between me and Anna. Only the twins' father, Astaroth, would have the ability to see it, but that would be enough to have the both of us killed. The five of us take a cab to the hotel and sit silently, waiting. The tension in the room is like static electricity. I'm pouring bourbon into my flask when Capano gets a call from Belial.
Pick up Anna on your way to the summit. She's in room 433, same hotel as you.
Yes, Duke Belial, he answers smoothly.
Of course Belial would ring Cope to collect her. I stare at the wall and shake my head.
We leave soon after that, sliding into our coats and winding scarves about our necks. My body is heavy as we take the lift down to Anna's floor.
Capano knocks on her door and she opens it slowly. She smiles hesitantly when she sees it's us. Nobody but Mana smiles back. Anna looks fit in a pair of black trousers with black heels and a puffy grey coat. Her hair is down and she's exuding such a sweetness, I have to look away before she meets my eye. We leave to walk to the comedy club where the summit will take place. Fucking demon humour. The six of us are the only people in Times Square who aren't laughing and talking, plastered or nutters. My fists are shoved tightly into my jacket's pockets, but I cannot unclench them. I keep Anna in my sight, and each time I feel her eyes on me, soft and warm, I want to close my eyes and savour it. Instead, I lock my jaw and let the flavour of hatred roll around on my tongue. I wonder if Beely always told her the rules about a summit, how Neff are not to speak unless asked a direct question. I wonder if Belial has taught her to lie with confidence when the Dukes question her. I wonder if, holy shit, is Anna still a virgin? My father will know. My fists clench tighter. When we turn down the street where the summit will take place, I fall back to walk beside Anna. My eyes scan the area for immediate dangers. I've been listening out for Dukes all day, trying to catch any snatches of conversation that might give clues about what they're after tonight, but it's all bollocks. They say nothing of importance, so wrapped up in their own enjoyments. Being next to Anna soothes me, and I can finally relax my hands and take them from my pockets. I want to look at her, but I'm afraid I will grab her and run. It's a cruel fate that Anna showed up at my gig that night last summer. It's cruel that I open my heart for the first time in my life to the one person who could so utterly annihilate me with her goodness. It's a cruel fate that I pushed her away to keep her safe, only to lose her anyhow. But she does have the hilt, the sword of righteousness that the nun gave her. I wonder what kind of damage she could do with it tonight. How many dukes could she kill before she's taken down? Does she have it in her? We're momentarily halted by a load of people spilling out of a club. Anna's arm brushes mine, and I feel the back of her hand against my palm. Then her pinky winds around mine, deliberately connecting us while it's too crowded for anyone to notice. I am flooded with a blinding sense of joy at this simple contact from Anna. This small gesture that shows I still mean something to her. Recklessness overcomes me, and while the street is too crowded for anyone to notice, I pull Anna by the pinky and she follows easily. I'm holding my breath, so hungry for this moment I can hardly stand it. I lead her quickly into a small alcove stairway where we rush down, away from the others. It's dark and smells of damp earth as I turn her to face me and press my mouth to hers. She doesn't push me away. She pulls me closer. She meets my fierceness with her own, and together we heat each other in the icy air. Our frozen noses and cheeks thaw. Even the air around us steams with warmth. We cling and taste and breathe each other's breaths. This stolen kiss tells me everything I need to know. Anna still wants me, still cares for me, still needs me. We break the kiss and I press my forehead to hers. Our breath clouds around us, too hot for the winter air. I watch her as she touches my face, and I can't understand how anyone could want to hurt her. I don't want to live in a world where someone like Anna Witt is in danger for being who she is. I would trade places with her if I could. In fact, if Anna is to die tonight, so will I. I won't let her die alone. When Ginger orders us up from the stairwell, back to reality, everything is a blur. I take a long draw from the flask, relishing the burn and how it dulls my senses. Is this what it's like, when you know you're going to die? I'm a zombie as we make our way down into the comedy club for the summit. A dead man walking. The six of us sit as far from the Dukes as possible. The Aussie Neff guarding the door doesn't find the knives hidden in the compartments of my boots. I bend down at our table while everyone's busy and take them out, sliding them into my pockets. Blake notices, his jaw tightening. He won't look directly at me, but he's blinking, and I know he wants to ask me what the hell I'm thinking. I lace my fingers over my abdomen and lean back. When the time comes, I don't want him involved. I don't expect anyone to try to save me. I drink more. Father takes the stage, and I stare without expression as he cordially welcomes the Dukes and Legionnaires and Azael, the personal messenger of Lucifer, who might have been the spirit circling Anna at that party before Belial showed, still don't know what that was about. Father welcomes Rahab, the Duke of Pride, to the stage, and I feel the burn of bile and bourbon rising as Rahab reminds all of us Neff of our place in the world.
Your life is not your own. You were bred to serve us. There is one among you who has been warned and yet still chooses poorly.
Has been warned? Was Anna ever warned? I wait for the bomb to drop, but Rahab never even looks toward Anna. He stares toward a middle table full of Neff.
Gerlinda, daughter of Kobal.
Bloody hell. My eyes shoot around the room as it all becomes clear. It's not about Anna. They're after another Neff. I school my body and my face not to react. I must not exhale loudly or slump with relief. I sit rigidly and take a celebratory sip of bourbon, though I'm quite buzzed enough to block any bond from showing. I lean forward and steal a glance toward Anna, and the look on her face punctures my heart, deflating my relief. She is staring at the stage and the Neff Gerlinda with unguarded horror, as if she might scream or cry as the dukes begin to heckle. No, Anna, I want to say. Stay silent and be grateful. There's nothing you can do to stop it. You don't even bloody know her. But since when has that mattered to Anna? She's a bleeding heart for injustice, and I know it will scar her to witness this. I don't particularly want to view this show myself, so I know it's a million times worse for her. Shite, she needs to just stare at the wall and try to block it out or something. But every time I glance down, she's fervently watching, even moving her lips. Please, Anna, please, for the love of God, keep your damn mouth shut. She is making me so nervous. If she can just make it through this, we'll all be all right. I know it's cruel of me, but I don't care about Gerlinda or what's happening to her on stage. I can block it out. I can only hope Belial has taught this skill to Anna. I'm beginning to sweat in this stupid button-up shirt. It's freezing outside, but 1,000 degrees in here. I undo the next button on my shirt and take another drink. Gin shoots me a stay-still glare. The entire room tenses, and I look up for the first time, allowing myself to fully see what's happening. Rahab has raised the gun to the Neff woman's head. I've never seen anyone die before. I start to shift my eyes away, when I hear a lovely voice call out from several seats down and my heart stops.
No!
Anna shouts. Oh my God. Her voice rings in my ears, echoing. No, no, no. Everyone turns toward our tables, staring in shock.
Rahab yells, Which of you dares to speak out at this sacred summit?
This cannot be happening. Why, Anna, why? Why can't you be a silent bystander just once? The room begins to spin as they bring Anna to the stage. My stomach rolls. I move to the edge of my seat and I see Capano grip the table edge in front of him. All eyes in the room are on Anna, but Belial slightly turns and eyes our group of Neff in the corner. With one hand at his side, he cups it downward and presses down, as if to say, stay seated. Does he have a plan? It's taking every ounce of my energy to remain seated while Anna is up there under Rahab's scrutiny. I have no idea how she can manage to appear both fragile and strong all at once. Father waves a hand in the air, and my stomach drops when he speaks.
Good Hades, Belial! She's still a virgin!
The room gasps in unison. Blake flinches next to me and Cope scoots forward. Mana covers her mouth, but Ginger slaps her hand quickly down. The Dukes argue about how to deal with Anna and why she's still pure. All I can do is stare at her face, at the fear in her creased brow. By now, Rahab is furious that his show's been interrupted by an insolent Neff, and he's ready to punish her with or without her father's permission. He shoves Gerlinda out of the way and hits Anna in the side of the head. My hand is in my pocket and I'm halfway to my feet before Blake grabs my arm like a steel vice and yanks me back down. Anna gets up again, standing strong as she takes yet another hit. The sound of her involuntary cry makes me struggle to take in air. I want her to reach for the hilt and murder him. I want him dead. Why isn't she using the sword? Rahab points to the gun on the table and snarls at Anna.
To make amends for disrupting our session, you will complete it for us. You will kill her yourself.
Shite. She will not pull that trigger, and he knows it. Everything with these bastards is a test or a game, and the rules are always stacked to ensure our failure.
Raise the gun, Rahab tells her.
I know with sudden clarity, this is the moment we'll both die. Only a miracle can save Anna now. Only a miracle. My vision blurs for a split second and a foreign urge stirs deep within me. I have never spoken to God, never asked him for anything, but for the first time ever, I want to pray. As Anna stares down at that gun, a silent prayer stutters its way from my heart. Save her, please, I'm begging you. You're the only one powerful enough. I will do anything. If I live, I will stay far away from her. Please, just don't let them kill her. Take me instead. Don't let her suffer.
Last chance, Rahab says.
He raises the gun to Anna's head and cocks it. When I hear the click, I'm on my feet and my knife is out. Rahab will be dead before he has a chance to pull the... What the bloody hell is that? A gigantic light splits the back of the room and sends out a glow. Did someone open a door or turn on a spotlight? I look at Anna and find she is the only one not looking at the light. She's looking at me. And then Capano, who's standing two seats down. She gives her head an almost indecipherable shake, and I feel an overwhelming urge to sit. It takes me a moment to realize she is using her silent compulsion, and I want to scream. The room brightens further, and Rahab lowers his arms. All of the attention has turned away from Anna to the light. I squint as I try to look at it. Abruptly, I fall back into my chair and stare. Angels. The Maker sent angels. Is this... Did he answer my prayer? Or is this coincidence? I begin to shake, overcome by the beings pushing into the room. The Dukes are falling back and scrambling to move away. Neff jump up and run, huddling against the walls in fear. The angels eye the room sternly, and I have no doubt they would gladly take out every one of our stained souls if the Maker gave the order. I want to run on stage and snag Anna away, but the angels move forward. It is not her time, says the angel in front, nodding to Anna. She will serve as a test to many souls. Not her time. I exhale in a rush. They really are here to save her. Oh, Rahab is livid. A purple vein has taken prominence in his forehead. To see the Dukes crapping themselves might be the highlight of my life.
Fine, Rahab says with a deadly smile. It is not her time now, but it is hers.
The bastard raises his gun and shoots Galinda in the face. Anna shrieks as the girl tumbles back, dead. The angels rise up in unified indignation, and I lift a hand to block the brightness. Chaos breaks loose as Rahab orders everyone out of the room. Neff push and shove to get to the exit. Where is Anna? As the angels retreat and the light fades, it's turned into a damn near trampling spree. I search for Anna, working my way through until I see her golden head. I call out to her and she tries to press back into the crowd to get to me. I don't know why it's so important for me to touch her in that moment, but I need to feel her to prove to myself she's alive. We finally link hands near the exit, but Belial pulls us apart. He practically carries her out and shoves her into a cab where she's whisked away. Anna and I watch each other through the back window until she's out of sight. She's safe. Adrenaline still charges through my body. I turn and walk briskly with the running crowd, getting as far from the Dukes as I can. After an hour of wandering, I sit on a park bench in Manhattan and stare down at my shaking hands in the glow of a streetlight. I don't know where the others have gone. I simply stare at my hands, in shock that there's still blood of life pumping through them. My breaths are still hot against the cold air. My boots are still solid on the ground. When you're certain you're going to die and then you live, it's a strange sensation. But I don't dare feel relief. I don't dare feel anything. I don't even startle when a hand comes down hard on my shoulder and I look up into the face of Belial. He jerks his head for me to follow him and turns to leave without waiting. I shove my hands into my pockets and follow a few feet behind him. I follow him into the underground, where we take the train to the end of the line in New Jersey. I follow him until we're at a packed bar in Hoboken, clear of the Dukes in New York City. And then I sit in silence at the end of the bar as Belial orders 5 shots of wild turkey and throws them back one after the other, before sitting on the edge of the stool beside me. He puts one giant hand on his thigh, and the other arm drapes along the bar beside me. He leans forward, boxing me in, and talks under his breath in a low, lethal tone.
I saw you tonight. If any of the others had seen your little show, you'd be dead.
My jaw is clenched. He must not appreciate my I-don't-give-a-shit expression, because he points a hefty finger at my face.
You listen to me right now, kid, and you listen good.
His eyes. He's beyond furious about what happened tonight.
You stay the hell away from my daughter. You understand me?
I swallow hard, but my throat is dry. I was planning to, sir.
You're no good for her.
Stab. I agree, sir. He narrows his beady brown eyes as if searching for sarcasm. I'm too numb to manage any sort of sarcasm or wit.
You think you're in love with her?
I don't answer this, and he plows forward.
You think she loves you? That she's meant for you? Wrong, lover boy. My girl's meant for bigger things. She loves everybody and everything. You're just a stray she'll eventually forget about. Understand?
Everything he said is true, but that doesn't mean my insides aren't ripped out. It doesn't mean there's not a part of me that somehow hoped I was wrong, and that Belial might see whatever good thing Anna sees in me. But Belial sees the real me. The unworthy me. My lips move, yes, sir, but only dry sound comes out.
You are not a safe option. Not as a friend, and not as anything else. If Anna wants to pal around with Neff, it sure as hell's not going to be you. She can fall for that son of a losser all day long, but I'll be damned if I let the son of Farza fuck with her heart.
I grit my teeth. It feels as if a boa constrictor has encircled my chest. I give a tight nod.
I know you thought you were cute tonight, playing Romeo like a goddamn fool, but the bullshit ends right now. If you ever endanger her again... If you dare to contact her or so much as look at her, I have friends who will make your death look like an accident. Am I clear?
To see myself through his eyes, to be reminded so sharply and clearly of all the reasons I'm unworthy of Anna, it's like a series of stinging slaps across the face. Belial's eyes bore into me and his nostrils flare. I give him another nod, my neck stiff. He rubs his goatee down and pushes back from the bar. Belial leaves me there in Hoboken, where I sit until they kick me out. I walk the streets in darkness, hoping to be finished off by drug dealers or gangs, but it turns out the bad guys are never around when you need them. Perhaps I should pray for an angel of mercy to put me out of my misery. No, I will not pray again. I'm thankful Anna was saved, but having my own life spared feels like a fluke, and I dare not remind the Maker I'm still here. Still, I will make good on my end of the bargain. I walk. At 6 in the morning, I ring our lead singer, Michael, from a street in Jersey City.
What the fuck, Ro?
He grumbles.
I'm in.
It takes him a moment to catch my meaning, and then he chuckles. I've been the only lascivious member who hasn't yet agreed to make the suggested move to LA. We can focus on our music full time. I've been holding out, wanting to remain close to Anna.
Hell yeah, baby!
His voice is raspy with sleep.
You been up all night?
Yeah, I say. He laughs again.
We're gonna rock that shit in L.A. Wait and see how much ass you get out there, man. You won't regret it.
He yawns into the phone. I feel none of his enthusiasm. I feel nothing.
Go back to sleep, mate.
Yeah, later.
We disconnect and I hail a cab for the Newark airport, wondering if I'll ever feel anything again. Chapter 16. Postcard. It's like somebody stole the biggest piece of me. I may never see it again. I may never see you again. Before the fall, by the Rescues. I should have hired movers, but I didn't trust anyone to touch my drums. I leave behind my bedroom set, but take everything else from the basement with the help of Michael, Raj and Bennett. I don't think Father is thrilled about not having me under his thumb any longer, but he approves of my continuing on as a musician. I haven't told him I plan to drop out of school when I turn 18 in March. When we're loaded up and the guys leave, I trudge to Father's office to say goodbye. He doesn't get up from his oversized leather chair, but he lifts his eyes, scrutinizing my long-sleeved T-shirt and jogging bottoms slung low.
Change into something more attractive before you go.
Yes, Father.
You're still expected to come to Atlanta to help Marissa as needed.
My already tight muscles clench further. Yes, sir.
I can't believe you're going to drive that monstrosity across the country yourself like a bloody commoner.
I look down at my hands as he continues.
I still expect you to work along the way.
Without question, sir.
I have very high expectations of you in California. I'm sure you won't mind if my legionnaires or I pop in now and again.
Of course not, Father. I look forward to your visits. He stares at me as if trying to detect my bluff, and I stare back, unblinking. Finally, he nods, finished with me, and then turns in his chair to face the lewd images on his computer. I nod to myself and turn to leave. I drive the same route I took with Anna, only I can't go faster than 55 miles per hour because I'm pulling the SUV behind me, and the damn thing swerves back and forth. So I take my time, blasting my music to drown out my thoughts. Anna is everywhere. She is smiling at every landmark and showing kindness to every stranger I encounter. She is laughing at every silly billboard and humming along to my music. When I reach Arizona and my route changes, she is with me as I stop and walk to the ledge of the Grand Canyon. She is staring in awe at the magnitude, feeling small and fragile. She is with me because she's inside me and I cannot rid myself of her. I've made too many mistakes when it comes to Anna. I endangered her because of my own selfish motives and desires. I wanted her for myself, even when I knew I wasn't good enough. I want to be good enough. I shove my hands in my pockets and kick a rock. It goes soaring off the ledge and I never hear it hit. I've been waiting for something from the outside to change me, to kick me, to force me into a different life. But after watching Anna at the summit, grabbing her beliefs by the horns despite the dangers, I've realized it won't be some outside power that changes me. It has to be me. Anna and Capano have control over themselves. Only I can control me. And it's time to make a change. I've always lived as if I had no choice, but it's not true. There is always a choice, no matter the consequences. I can't live Father's lifestyle any longer. I can't love Anna and continue to be with other people. I'm tired of hating myself. I'll never be good enough for Father or Anna or God for that matter, but if I can be proud of myself for once, that will be a bloody good start. I turn to go back to the van but stop when a bird flies past my face, landing in the gravel at my feet. I swear the damn thing is staring up at me. It even cocks its head to the side. I nudge my foot toward it, trying to scare it away, but it only bristles a little and hops closer. He puffs his feathers at me and coos. It's a dove, I realize, and a lump rises in my throat. My own personal peace offering. Sod off, stupid bird. It coos at me again and my palms begin to sweat.
Just because I reach out to him with one blasted prayer and decide to change my life, the Maker thinks I've suddenly switched sides. I look up at the heavens and shake my head. This is nothing to do with you!